we can always be with you. When you were here, I should have been more aware to stay by you. But the greatest lesson is to stay by you now. When I praise you, I feel satisfied. As when I dress the deity, I feel beautiful and pure. Or when in heat I fan you, I feel cooled. Your books are with us, and sacred duties. No one can say you have gone away. At worst, we must say, I have abandoned him. And whoever does that can yet return within your shelter, if he takes it up again and resurrects his life. There is no running out supply, no starvation from your presence. Who can claim there is a shortage? If there is a waning, that we must mend. It is the jiva bird turning away from his friend. You are instructing us from within, and by Lila Smaranam, you are again speaking from the Vyasa Sun, going for a walk at dawn, and we can come too. The holy name is given by you, and to chant is to please you again. You smile at the servitor who distributes your books, and your disciples, Mahatmas, are like expansions of you. To serve them is also to stay with you. Let me not begrudge service in separation, but take it as it is. This is no poem's concoction, but the facts described. You live forever, and the follower lives with you, both here and in the spiritual world. There will be no breaking for he who holds fast eternal service unto you. New Delhi, a visit with Indira. It is a duty, whether talking to a young boy or the Prime Minister. He wants to engage them in devotional service to Krishna. Now, if she wants to, she can help. She stood to receive him, the world-famous woman, the stylish white streak in her gray hair, the sharp nose and elderly beauty. He was clearly her senior, but for sweetness and peace, Prabhupada was like a fair spring day. 2 days ago, they killed the PM of Bangladesh. Maybe I am next, she thought, and they surrounded her palace with army guards in trucks. This is not a good time to meet you, she said. But Prabhupada took it in his favor. Even while in fear of death, she kept her obligation. She offered him a seat, and he began to speak. Prabhupada had written notes. Grant immigration for 500 followers, and 9 other items. Extreme seeming demands. All ministers must train as brahmanas, close the slaughterhouses, stop prostitution, at least all government officers must join in kirtan twice a day, and India should support the worldwide Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada's notes were a glimpse of a different world, where a king or a queen gives heed to the pure-hearted servant of the Lord. As a Vaishnava bold and pure, he comes to ask surrender to Krishna, and not for the benefit of shaking hands in a photo moment with the head of state. He had the stature as world guru in the realm of spiritual knowledge, and as an international leader of a culture and world religion, he had followers and experience beyond even hers, and so she respected him. She was too anxious to hear the proposals, yet she praised his work, and Prabhupada replied, "They are good boys." But with assassination possible at any moment, she could not consider even the permanent visas. Not today. And so they parted after 15 minutes. At least he was back in India. Heavy in Vrindavan. Prabhupada came to us not only to smile to us, but he was also anxious and sometimes angry because he really cared He had to show us exactly what to do, how to clean a floor with a clean, wet rag, how to travel and preach parampara, and how to manage the Vrindavan temple. 7 just-printed books arrived during his appearance day. His disciples had toiled. Now they telegrammed, "We have lost all desires except to print and distribute your books." Deeply pleased, he thought he might just stay in Vrindavan and write through all the Krishna seasons. But the temple was new, and there was too much to do. Again and again, Gunanava tried to fix the bell to the temple front. It kept breaking the rope or didn't ring right, and Prabhupada heard it as he walked out front to see and insist. Through the night, he stayed awake, and when the night guard slept, Prabhupada called for Harikesh. "Did you hear that?"
"No, I didn't hear anything."
"That's right. Go out and wake him. He must ring the bell each hour." To make a proper garland, to dress the deities on time, to live in Vrindavan in renunciation, to cook expertly for the guests, not a dirty yard or a bell that doesn't ring, or rude words to Brijabasis, his followers had to learn it. To make a strong Vrindavan temple, to attract the people away from bogus teachers, away from birth and death. He stayed with them to mold a temple. He pointed his cane to a bird's nest on the ceiling. No one else had noticed. On his walks, he didn't speak much of Krishna dancing with the gopis, but made criticisms. When would they get the temple together? When would they do things right, not get cheated, learn to cook, be happy with hard work in Krishna-conscious duties? He stayed shaping them. He was beyond anger, a gravity beyond knowing. Sitting in his room, he may seem displeased, but that is his ecstasy before the Lord. Manavendra Puri cried at the time of his disappearance, "I could not attain Krishna, I could not attain Mathura." But only the foolish Ramchandra Puri came to console his guru, saying, "Why don't you be happy in Brahman?" His down-turned mouth, his sharp glancing eyes full of light, and with a look that penetrated self, he was heavy at disciples' mistakes. But then he would dismiss it with no trace of grudge. But like a storm, it recurred at the next foolish incident, when, after showing us firsthand, we still could not do it. Then came his reprimands, another type of teaching, not easy to surrender to, as when sitting back adoring him from a distance, or comfortably hearing his lecture. But chastisements were just as important and more merciful. He stayed to mold the temple, to mold his men and women. Heavy like a rock, profound, not to be moved, like a mountain, is Guru, his stern face. People may not like it, but when everyone else is lost in frivolity, in chaos and confusion, to have that one rock you can go to, when in the storm all other trees are uprooted, to know you can always go and find him fixed in Krishna, the Absolute, assuring us to depend on Krishna's holy name, that is Prabhupada. "The more grave, the more better," said Shesha, in selecting a picture of Prabhupada. Though we may want to see a smile, we also want to see the downturned mouth, and we don't misunderstand him as sour or depriving, but we need someone very heavy to turn down all nonsense, to look it in the face, unafraid. Let us always yearn to see him stern and grave, before the glitter of Maya, disapproving of our wrongs. No one else cares. No one even knows our wrongs as wrong. Only he can frown and show disappointment when we're lost in Maya. In his love, he reaches out to us and says, "That is nonsense. You are a fool. Now do it right. And remember, you are serving Krishna." From Africa, anxiety of love. From Africa, they called to you, "Dear Srila Prabhupada, please," and you went. Even after a total wreck car accident in Mauritius, you traveled on to Nairobi. You didn't care for your own body as much as for the welfare of others and the well-being of your Krishna consciousness movement. All the way from Africa, your eyes could see. You knew workers were stealing from your Bombay construction site, and therefore you couldn't eat. "How can I eat when my property is being stolen?" Your worldwide movement was like your body, and a scrape or hit on any part, the falling down of a single disciple, or the attack of demons in any part of the world, produced pain to the person, like a sliver under the skin. That was your exchange with Krishna as world preacher, just as Vasudev tasted loving panic when his son, baby Krishna, fell from his arms into the river Jamuna. In anxiety of love, rarely crying tears in public, we saw more the constant devotion of your active life, care and concern that the books be printed exactly right, and the always incoming letters. Why were they fighting? Why did the wife of a devotee go away? What will happen with that temple's debt? Where is the money going? What about ISKCON in Argentina and Russia? The tide of Kali Yuga, animal slaughter, abortion, war, the cheating of the people by organized gangs. Your anxiety of love rose with the tide of sinfulness. But you were triumphant, peaceful, fighting always, anxious, but always depending on Krishna. His organization. People may say, "We don't want organized religion," but that wasn't Prabhupada's view. "It must be very organized," he told the anti-organized of Hawaii, "to carry out our mission's aims." "But won't people get more attached to the institution and thus forget Govinda?" "No. Since Govinda is absolute," said Prabhupada, "his institution is also absolute." He formed it in 1970, defined it, picked the men, assigned them to zones, the GBC of ISKCON, told them to see that devotees are chanting 16 rounds, the temples are clean, finances are in order. Spare him the headaches so he could write. Once a year, meet in Mayapur, settle the affairs of World ISKCON, and chalk out a program that everyone should follow it. Even Prabhupada took shelter. "Bring your problem to the GBC," he said. "I cannot manage the whole thing. It is not one man's work." But when an argument arose between grihasthas and sannyasis, he had to solve it. The war between the saffrons and whites never got bloody, but there was derogatory talk and stealing of men from temples to go join the traveling sannyasis, and grihasthas forbidding the sannyasis to speak. He had to solve it as they converged to the Mayapur meeting in 1975. It climaxed in his room, two groups with their own sides, but he settled it with the verse, "Kiva Vipra, Kiva Nyasi." Anyone can preach, anyone can manage, be he sannyasi or grihastha, only provided he knows the science of Krishna and is actually advanced. Both sides were satisfied by his shastric and personal pulling them together, his strong spirit to harmonize his spiritual family. "Let there be no personal ambition," he said. "Keep it together. Work for the good of all." Prabhupada is writing again. He wasn't writing much. Sometimes weeks went by, only a few digits each morning. Demanding work had prevented him. Managing Bombay temple construction, training us up in Vrindavan. healing an ISKCON schism in Mayapur, or worrying. A conspiracy was working itself out of his spiritual movement. Was a trusted disciple in trouble? Or it might be his personal health. But diminishing in his writing shouldn't be. It was wrong. It was like dying. Sincere disciples had to write it, find a place where he can go. Like Hawaii, peaceful, where sometimes he had done hundreds of digits per day. He agreed and even mentioned Aurobindo's practice of seeing people only one day a year. Just think, Prabhupada constantly writing, at least for some time. So he went with a determined, trained group, servant, editor, typist, cook, and an attitude to concentrate on Srimad Bhagavatam, now in the seventh canto. We loved to see him at writing, knew it wasn't ordinary work, went best when there were no door slams, knew also not to demand him to produce it as if it were factory labor. But we waited outside the door, eager to see early morning results, carrying out the tape to be typed, good news for the world. We had seen him sometimes through a keyhole, the microphone in hand, pausing a second, then speaking, head moving for emphasis, his private audience with Krishna. And yet, he was addressing everyone for thousands of years, and all scholarly Vaishnava Siddhanta. Deep in the universe of eternal Sanskrit, 12 commentators from different centuries rushing together just as sages all came to the meeting of Parikshit and Sukadeva. Now they flew to join the Bhaktivedanta purports, combined meeting of minds, speakers, hearers, descending from spiritual planets to the clean, quiet room and desk of Prabhupada, to the lips, the mouth, the gestured words, the clicking off and on of the pause button. We saw the externals, knew it was eternal, but could only wonder at the extent of the intimacy, Prabhupada, Krishna, and the Acharyas. We could not even explain our own inconceivable pleasure. He had said it was his most important service to his Guru Maharaj. So for us also, it was like a benediction moon, better than money, fame, women, better than sports, politics, business. It was extended full kirtan, singing and dancing, the perfection of our family love, and the most serious preaching to the world. And in Hawaii, he immediately increased to 200, 300 digits a day. One night he shut his door at 9 p.m. and stayed up all night, finishing the seventh canto. Completed in the temple of the Panchatattva by the mercy of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. On Waikiki Beach one morning, his servant exclaimed joy that Prabhupada was working so fast. "Oh, I can finish very quickly," Prabhupada said, "but I have to present it for their understanding. It requires deep thought, very carefully, to present it for the common man." And who was that common man? It is me, and you, and everyone. The big scholar is a common man. He knows nothing of Krishna. And Prabhupada made sure to give him Krishna many times on every page. The intellectuals, world leaders, youth in search, future generations, black, white, yellow races, all are common men. Kirata Hunandra Pulinda Pulkasha. Because wherever you go, you find no one knows Krishna unless he has read these books. Common men become rare souls, led by his purports into comprehension. Krishna is the supreme. He knew these books were like gold. They are also very grave, he said. Not everyone can understand. But more than ever before, he was making it possible. And as soon as he would write it, it would be rushed, but carefully, into print, and rushed, sometimes not so carefully, into the hands of conditioned souls. Even Jaghai and Madhai could be saved, at least by the touch, and if he could read a single page. Devanagari script, Romanized spelling, word-for-word synonyms, English text, elaborate purport. What he had begun in India in 1960 became his life's method, a complete tradition unto itself.
Were we pleased to be there when he produced them? Or are we pleased to hear of it now? Are we pleased to hear how they were sold? But now we have to do it. Read them and distribute. That is a life's work also for whoever is his follower. The reading every day is the best way to remember him. He said so. To hear him resonant in your mind and thinking creates faith anew, builds strong the fibers of conviction. Or, as he said, protects us against the onslaught of the atheist. We will see Krishna in Srimad Bhagavatam and know he is everywhere, always with us. The careful reading daily will also put us transcendental to the constant tricks of fate and illusion that try to plague us and harass us. We will be safe and sound, even in the calamity, when we remember Krishna in the pages of the Bhagavat book, from the purports of the Bhagavat person, and from that regular reading, we will go back to Godhead. The distribution, also every day, the best engagement for a devotee. And Krishna says, he is the best servant. The honesty of living obedient. That you have received this knowledge is not enough. You must distribute it to others. How? Where? Wherever people are, for sale or as gift, by persuasion or by mail, to the passing crowds, to people in their homes, in classrooms, or if you know a better way, then do it. Figure it out, but give them out. And when you see someone reading who before knew nothing, and when later you see him becoming a Krishnite, then you know this is the potency. This is why Prabhupada stayed up all night, and why we were so happy to be with him as he produced his priceless books. The benediction. Leaving writing for traveling, he returned in triumph 10 years later to Manhattan. As Jayananda drove the car past spanning Brooklyn Bridge, it brought out memories in Prabhupada. No devotees knew him then when he wandered around Manhattan, sometimes sitting near the water, waiting to go back to India. He came there helpless like Prahlad was helpless. And with nothing else but brave devotion, he became like Arjuna, the instrument of victory. 10 years later, his spiritual family was much expanded. And we must expand unlimitedly. Those days of fragments of memory now. Fifth Avenue parade, 3 tall carts, how he mounted Subhadra's cart at 34th Street, and the police captain said, "I knew by the way you people looked at him that he was something special, the Swami." 3 selling carts downtown. Prabhupada was unsmiling from ill health. At Washington Square on a stage he spoke, and a Christian heckler with megaphone fell into the pond to cheers. For the devotees, these were euphoric weeks, until he went, suddenly, off to London. "I felt left out the whole time you were in New York City, Srila Prabhupada, because there were so many leaders more distinguished than me, and I couldn't get close unless I pushed, and I wasn't doing anything marvelous or important for you to call me, except one time in your room you asked me to sit close, and afterwards I told you the library party had pretty much covered America and now wanted to embark on Europe. You smiled so big and pleased, I knew you really wanted it. And that smile was our send-off to deliver books to the continent." So these are fragments of recall. Otherwise, it is all the past, details forgotten. But the main instruction and impression is you leaving to preach despite illness. You wouldn't stay and rest. And I heard that you said, "I want the benediction to go on fighting for Krishna, just like Arjuna." I heard you said it, and I believe it, because you always went on, and it is you who are giving us that benediction. His response to the menace. In his last year on earth, a conspiracy moved against him. Hare Krishna mantra is insidious brainwashing, mind control, which destroys the brain, and the Indian cult leader is exploiting them for his profits. He deprives them of their sleep, forbids healthy meat eating, imprisons them in his temples, takes away their sex enjoyment, and therefore all the devotees should be kidnapped and deprogrammed or at least thrown into jail.
Prabhupada noted while walking on Juhu Beach, "They are determined to cut us down." In a New York court case, the assistant district attorney charged that an army of zombies was readying to march on the Capitol and overthrow the government. The devotees were alarmed. Would people really believe this? In Kali Yuga, anything is possible. Bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust, and anger, the demon becomes envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and blasphemes against the real religion. Maybe they could do it, as with previous persecutions, big lies, and witch hunts in America. The unholy alliance of fanatical parents, hired thugs, anti-spiritual psychiatrists, prejudiced law officials, and sensational media who lumped the Krishnas in with every concocted cult. Could they stop the onward thrust of the Krishna consciousness movement? Prabhupada's first response to the dangerous New York case was like a conch shell blast of courage, bringing comfort to the minds and hearts of those who stood in battle. He urged them to bring his books into court, convince the judge and jury to read them, tell them our books are older than the Bible, and in India there are millions of Krishna temples. Now they are feeling the weight of this movement, Prabhupada wrote in his Call to Arms letter. They thought, these people will come and go, but they see we are staying. Now we have set fire. It will go on. It cannot be stopped. You can bring the big fire brigades, but the fire will act. The brainwashed books are already there. Even if they stop externally, internally it will go on. Our first campaign is book distribution. Go house to house. The real fighting is now. Krishna will give you all protection. So chant Hare Krishna and fight. And when devotees from the West arrived with latest news of the fight, Prabhupada assured them, it is so much mercy from Krishna. People will at least chant and hear Hare Krishna, and as he becomes more famous, the truth of his movement will come out. Even the Lord was not exempt. As a 6-month-old child on the lap of his mother, the demon Putana had come to kill. Krishna himself became important, not simply lying in his mother's lap, but by killing the demons, he established himself. Who else could see the danger that way? Others might speak of it, but only Prabhupada could give the absolute viewpoint to all his followers, no matter what happened. Krishna would be true. My devotee is never vanquished. Yasoda wants to save him, Putana wants to kill him, but both became liberated souls, and that is the beauty of Vrindavan, where everyone is thinking of Krishna. When he fell into the river Yamuna and fought in the coils of the snake, it was very bad news for the residents, who cried that their life was lost, and yet Krishna was the center of their distress. So they may talk against Krishna, but when Krishna is the center, it is everyone's gain. Thus Prabhupada gave us indomitable will. His transcendental lectures. Despite crises, he continued regular outward preaching. As when struggling for the Bombay land, he would worry all day with careful tactics, but at 7 p.m., glancing at his watch, it is time for the lecture. Then, mounting the temple Vyasasan, as if flying direct to Vaikuntha, he would speak conclusive Bhagavatam, coming to grips with all problems from the viewpoint of the Absolute. He condemned everyone who was not a devotee of Krishna, yet with no personal malice. Pure enthusiasm for Krishna's words made each lecture sincere and unique. Except for him, maybe in the whole world, no one had more than a vague idea of God. He simply spoke on Krishna, and it will take a careful devotee to deeply appreciate how much he was giving us through Srimad Bhagavatam lectures. Kumbh Mela. To give his Bhagavat discourses, although Dr. Patel advised against it, Prabhupada went to Kumbh Mela. Too much crowds, cold, and disease, the doctor said. He even joked that the Mela had no value. No, Prabhupada said, they gather for Sadhu Sangha. If he went there to preach, then the Mela would be fulfilled. In cold and sickness he endured, staying awake all night, in coat, scarf, and hat within the freezing tent. Finally he relented to his disciples' pleas. Please, Prabhupada, here you can't write your books, and that is a bigger preaching than freezing, few people at your lecture, and your health impaired. He agreed, but not before igniting the Mela with an explosion of Krishna's mercy. Over 10,000 Hindi books distributed in 2 days through the Sadhu Sangha efforts of his men. Prabhupada in Bhubaneswar. Prabhupada in Bhubaneswar was a lesson in self-satisfaction. He praised the simple straw-roofed one-room hut, preferring it to a palace. And he praised the simple Indian style of passing stool outdoors in the field and washing with a lota. India's original culture, he praised as superior to all others, but now it was degraded by the nation's misleaders. The government was building its army and heavy industry, but Krishna had stressed, grow grains. Seeing the plight of the poor, Prabhupada gave away each night as much khichdi as he could gather. I know, he said, they are coming here because they are hungry. When a big leader announced with banners in the town his campaign against illiteracy, Prabhupada scoffed, they may learn to read, but without sufficient cows and grains, what good will it do the people? When he spoke before the Oriyans, one man challenged, what is God? And the next night another asked, what is Krishna? Prabhupada looked astonished. What is this? You are from India, and you do not know what is God? Our people of India have become so fallen that you ask, what is Krishna? Therefore we are a beggar nation. In Bhubaneswar, Prabhupada was like a combat general in the field. One morning, in pre-dawn dark, he began translation of Canto 10, and we heard him from the next room. Demoniac rulers are increasing their might, but Krishna will appear in the Hare Krishna movement just to diminish the burden of the world. People must take it seriously, for man-made devices and plans can never bring peace on earth. Taking his massage in the warm sunshine, he noted new-grown grass and criticized the scientists who cannot grow as nature does, but claim to outdo and outknow God himself. These rascals should be exposed. Although in physically remote Orissa, he gave instructions for the fight against the demons in America. Yes, we are brainwashing, said Prabhupada, because your brains are full of garbage. You live and eat with your best friend, the dog, and so you are untouchable. So we have come to scrub you clean. Is it wrong to clean a dirty room? Is it wrong to clean out garbage? Tell them like this, he said. And bring the books into court. They must read every line of over 80 volumes and show them there is no brainwashing as they claim it, but a cleansing of filth of the mind through authorized bhakti yoga. In Bhubaneswar, after the doubting guests had left, he informed us confidentially how Subhas Chandra Bose was the real hero of India's independence. And Prabhupada said his own men were an army of devotees formed for a peaceful mission to help and not exploit. Now the demons are feeling our presence. It is a fight and we have to defend. We are not like Vrindavan Babajis who claim, I never go out of Vrindavan, yet keep 36 widows. Sitting with him in that bare ground hut, we also preferred it to any luxury setting of the West, as we basked in the opulence of Prabhupada's intimate speech. Jagannath Puri without restrictions. He said he had come to remove the offense of restriction by the pandits. All over the world, Prabhupada had introduced Jagannath Swami in Rath Yatra festivals. In London, San Francisco, Melbourne, Paris, New York, millions of people had been blessed by Jagannath. So why, when they came to Puri, were devotees not allowed to enter the temple of Jagannath? This he said not to a few, but at a big public meeting under lights at a pandal. Remove this restriction, he argued, because Jagannath means Lord of the universe, not merely Lord of the people of Orissa. We didn't mind the restriction because we had our own Lord Jagannath and the presence of our spiritual master, at whose lotus feet reside all the tirthas. I particularly liked Puri because I got to be with him, and I asked about writing. Prabhupada said he didn't care for fiction, but parampara essays, poems, or a piece like How I Came to Krishna Consciousness was good for preaching. In the future he would give us the translation of Padma Purana, and he invited me to help him in the editing. No disappointment for us at Puri, as Prabhupada entered the ocean and bathed with his men, and he shared his prasadam, although not what the doctor ordered, of ghee-cooked sabjis with fresh hot puris. In Jagannath Puri, he also stayed up at night, ranging over subjects while we sat at his feet. Don't expect a smooth path, he said. Be tolerant. You should accept the demons' fight to make us more enthusiastic. A pure devotee makes progress in spite of checking. He spoke of his own 3 heart attacks. Do not expect smooth, happy going. Krishna never gave me a magic ash, said Prabhupada, as some modern gurus claim to possess. Nor did Arjuna ask for magic. We have to face things as they are and go on with our duty. We sobered to hear what we have to expect and pray to remember it in times of trial. But for the time we were with him in Jagannath Puri, there was no restriction. It was smooth, happy going in the presence of our spiritual guide. Now I can realize, surrounded by buffets to the Hare Krishna movement, what we need is Prabhupada. He can make smooth going, even in a place of prejudice and restriction. He can turn the material world into pure devotional service. By his grace, the lame can cross the mountain, and the blind can see stars in the sky. As Arjuna chose wisely Krishna, while Duryodhana chose numbers of troops, and yet Arjuna was the victor, so all we need is Prabhupada, and he is offering us his vani. We didn't know. Mayapur Festival, 1977. We didn't know it was his last year with us in Mayapur. Although there was some prediction, a man with numbers had said, every 11 years something special happens. Like in 22, he met his Guru Maharaj. In 33, it was initiation. In 44, he started back to Godhead. And in 55, he left his family life. In 66, he started in USA, so 1977 was next. Maybe, said Srila Prabhupada, this is the end. Whatever he said sped through the marble verandas, exactly repeated or changed. Everything happened from his room, where he spoke and sat, as the soul is seated in the heart. We could see you, golden Prabhupada. You were not a machine, but a person, guru to each of thousands. Prabhupada called me to his room at 3 a.m. and let me hear the recorded sounds of his latest purports. Transmigration of the soul, he taught, as spoken by Vasudeva to Kamsa. He compared it to the ignorance of our enemies who do not know the soul and therefore lack a brain. He saw himself like Vasudeva, who worries over Krishna. I know Krishna is God, he said, and yet I worry at any moment somewhere in the world the demons may stop this movement. He wanted me to write these thoughts in Back to Godhead essays to fight the asuras and enlighten the innocent. Even if I die, he said, everything will go on. But most of us didn't dare to think it, nor did we know. This was his last year with us. While he stayed in his room and we chanted Hare Krishna, learning to love the Dham. Or even if we accepted that 1977 might be the last year of Prabhupada on earth, yet we could not comprehend what the loss would mean. And so we traveled away from Mayapur to our ISKCON centers thinking maybe we should stay with him. But as servers in separation, we had no other choice, and it was actually our desire to return to our countries where Prabhupada was present in his order. He remained in Mayapur, where word soon reached him. The judge in New York on the first day of the trial had decided in our favor. The Hare Krishna movement is a bona fide religion. Prabhupada was very pleased and declared the triumph widely. Krishna is wonderful. Bombay. How long do you want to stay in Bombay? Not stay, said Prabhupada, but work. Then how long will you work there? As long as there is work, he said, as long as possible. And he went for 6 weeks, ending March, all of April, and into May. Our time with him was running out. He insisted to move into new Bombay quarters, even while workers smeared the floor and there was no toilet, doors, windows, or water. If I don't move in now, it will never be finished. These were the weeks of the last active pandal, heaviest lectures of all. Although Prabhupada was very thin and his voice seemed weak, people who visited asked, "Are you feeling well?" which he felt was useless talk. "Can't they see I am not well? Don't they know all health is a mirage, since everybody dies?" But to upstarts at the pandal he replied, "You are so foolish, you cannot understand." Fulfilling Giriraj's prayers that Prabhupada could stay in his gorgeous top-floor suite and receive Bombay's elite, the victorious Janata men came to talk of a brave new era. But Prabhupada said it was the same old thing. Unless the politicians stopped mere posing with the Gita and really surrendered unto him. He stopped morning walks and temple lectures, but produced large quantities dictating his morning purport tapes. He sat quietly for hours amidst the pleasant breezes, sounds of rustling palm leaves, the sunshine entering his top floor rooms. But sometimes he talked of the end. "You GBC men, don't spoil it," he said. "Keep what I have given, because I do not know how long I will stay." He sat erect at his splendid desk in light saffron dress. Very gaunt he was, and at midnight with wry humor he said to Giriraj, "I guess I must be liberated since I no longer sleep, eat, and there is no question of sex." Giriraj, at least, could understand the humble human words were true, but in the higher sense of liberation, as one who is entirely absorbed in ecstatic loving service unto Krishna. Old age was but another feature of his liberated life, as step by step, at every moment,
He always thought of Krishna and how to spread his mercy. That was always true, regardless of the state of body. Then one day he decided to move to Rishikesha for the curing effect of the Ganges.